Hey, yo, we about to tear it up.
Yo. Break it down.
This right here is how we do it. Break it down.
It's the Breaking Atoms podcast. We break things down to the very last compound. My name is Sumit, a.k.a. the Potty Mouth of the South.
And my name is Chris Mitchell, a.k.a. the Actual Factual.
100.
Kiaris, 100.
1-1-1-1-1. We made it.
Milestone.
100th episode. Wow. Chris, take a bow, man.
No, you know what? I would take a bow, but I had a drink. And as you can see, there's nothing left.
Was it Douce?
Nah, come on, bro. I'm from the bottom.
Come on, man.
We don't drink Douce. No, I had Cuban rum.
Okay. Listen, Cuban rum's my favorite.
Man, Cuban rum and
I don't drink, but if I'm going to drink anything, it'll be either Jamaican or Cuban rum.
Come on now. It's a milestone. Congratulations. It's been an absolute pleasure. And there's not a lot of firsts in life, as you know, as you get older. You know, sometimes you become comfortable. You start to get in the swing of things, become pessimistic, you know, the former professional pessimist. But 100 episodes, it's not been easy, but it's been fun. And I've enjoyed myself, and it's been a pleasure to do this with you. I know it sounds like I'm saying goodbye, but I'm saying this because I'm looking forward to another 100 episodes.
Yeah, there'll be more. And the only way to do the 100th episode was to get an absolute legend, a superhero of the game.
L-E-D-G. Was it how you spell it? L-E-D-G-E. Yes, Ledge.
Yeah, I'm not cutting that either. Keep that in.
Come on, man.
You went to school, innit? You went to school.
Yeah, I went to university too, bro.
No, we have none other than Mount Vernon's own Pete
Come
Rock.
Come on.
And I'm going to go as far to say... And I think you reminded me of this, actually. Or you pointed this out. It's his first UK podcast appearance.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, episode 100, we had to do something. But all of that aside, we've had conversations about Pete Rock's music, what it means to us. Like, you know, my wife, we had an argument in front of Pete Rock. Like, I wasn't going to bring it up because he probably wouldn't remember. But... You know, my missus loves her some Pete Rock. She would leave me for Pete.
Yeah, no, I mean, Pete Rock is an amazing individual, talented as hell. We appreciate his time. Shout out to Matt. This is excellent. But I think it's also a good opportunity while we're talking about the 100th episode to salute everyone who has chumped on the podcast prior.
Yes.
From episode zero to now, to everyone who's listened. We appreciate you. Philip from Gothenburg. I'm going to shout you out because my man, he hit me about the skills episode. And he was just like, yo, you guys are as nerdy as me. I can't, like, no one listens to skills. Like, my town, like, you guys are nerdy as me. Shout me out. So, Philip from Gothenburg, we appreciate you. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
But this is Pete Rock, Breaking Atoms podcast. Check it out. It's a Breaking Atoms podcast, a special episode. It's our 100th, 100, century, whatever synonym you want to use, we've got it. Right, it's our 100th episode, and the only way to do this right, the only person we'd want to get for our 100th episode is a true master, Chocolate Boy Wonder, Mount Vernon's own, hip hop's own, the legendary Pete Rock. Pete, man, how you doing?
Peace. How you doing, fellas?
We are.
We got Pete Rock on the podcast. How do you expect us to be?
Come on, man.
Yeah.
You know, let's go. The soul brother, man. Like. Come on, look at Pete.
Hip-hop.
Look at Pete looking like he's 20, 21, looking all fresh.
Yeah, look at that.
Skincare routine is crazy over there.
Thank you, brothers. Thank you, man. You know, just drink a lot of water, bro. You know what I'm saying?
Right, so we do a thing where we happily stand out with our heroes because this is what we're about. We're about documentation and we're about speaking to the people that have impacted the culture, future legends. Mm. We're not afraid to say how we feel about our heroes. Now, you are very much responsible for me loving hip hop, period. Right. So we spoke to Daz and my first early memory was Dog Food, but I didn't understand it. But fast forward a couple of years later, I sipped the Dom P watching Gandhi Till I'm Charged, scored by you, of course, was the thing that made me fall in love with hip hop. I'm 10 years old. I'm 9 years old. Right. And I hear that and I'm, you know, Southeast Asian. I hear a word that resonates with me and I'm like, who's done this? It's Pete Rock. Mm. And since then, I've fallen in love with rap. And it's because of you and Nas. And I've told Nas this, but I've never told you this. But you are the reason why I love rap. And for a lot of people listening and a lot of people who are affected by rap, you've probably done the same. So salute to you and thank you.
Thank you guys, man. I mean, you know, I'm very passionate, as you can see, you know what I'm saying? I love what I do. And I think that shows and you know, it's important that, you know, I show people how to have longevity in hip hop, being a producer and artist. And, you know, that's it, man. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, just putting my best foot forward each time.
No word. Okay. So let's get to Peacetrumentals 3, the live band. Obviously, being as fans, we understand, you know, the history about sampling with yourself. This time you took a different route. Was it more to challenge yourself, you know, during this time? Why with the live band with Daru Jones and everyone? Why did you go with the live band route? What was the thinking behind that?
Because I felt like I could pull something like that off, you know what I'm saying? And I was known for always being a sampler, so I wanted to show people that I could, you know, do live music as well and produce it and you know, arrange it. And that's what I did. Shout out to the Soul Brothers, you know what I'm saying? You know, on the project. You know, I couldn't have it any other way or anything successful without the guys, so I want to big them up.
Perfect. And how did you choose the band members and develop that chemistry? Was that just organic? Was it, you know, you saw them? Friendship, of course.
Well, it was like the help of my drummer, Daru, you know, and me knowing musicians myself, you know, we just made connections. You know, Daru was able to reach out to certain people that I never reached out to. I couldn't or didn't know. And, you know, like Mono Neon, for one, and to have him in my band is just like an honor, you know. And just, you know, everyone else just kind of came together. It was some that was there, and then we switched up, and now it's the band is what it is right now, and they sound great, man. And I'm, you know, I'm always open to you know, newer, you know, other musicians that could play, you know, stuff that I like to hear in the beats.
Okay, so Peacetrumentals 3, let's stick with that. You've almost branded the instrumental with your own thing. It's called a Peacetrumental. Talk about how that idea came up. And did you have any idea that it would become this franchise that we're still looking forward to, like 20 years later?
You know what? I love making beats. That's why, you know, I felt like doing these instrumentals was appropriate for me, because it's something fun personally for me. And then I'm just, you know, honored that people love it. You know what I'm saying? The fact that, you know, this whole instrumental thing in hip hop now is being done. And it just goes to show you the passionate side of me of how much I love making music. And I wanted to do something like this. You know what I'm saying? And then you got also the return of the SP 1200 instrumental album, which I'm going to do part two to as well.
Cool jazz. That's my joy.
Thank you.
Washing dishes, hoovering the house.
Yeah.
You know? Cool jazz.
Absolutely.
That's what I'm talking about. Yes, sir.
Pete, your father was a disc jockey. How did that influence you digging for records? Or did it?
I just loved the look and sound of vinyl, you know what I'm saying? Something I'm addicted to, you know what I'm saying? Ever since a little kid, you know what I mean? Since my dad introduced me to it all, you know what I'm saying? And I just been into it. And, you know, James Brown records are some of the first records I ever played, you know, before I found out about everybody else, which is why I gravitate to him so much and even name myself after him.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm always interested to know about the relationship between DJ and production. So you started as a DJ, and you kind of, you're part of this lineage of people like Marley, Prince Paul with Stetsasonic, Primo, Stack Selector. We've got like people over here like DJ Snips who are DJs and also producers. Can you talk about the relationship between DJing and how it helped you sample and with the remixes? Does BPMs play a part in that, knowing BPM numbers? Because back in the day when you'd have to blend and mix, you'd need to know the BPM. We have Serato now, it's easy, right? Or Ableton. But back then it was different. Right. You might need to know the BPM of a record to mix it with another.
Yeah.
your DJ yeah. influence,
or just have a good ear.
Oh right, yeah, or have a good ear. Did it? How did that influence your production being a DJ?
Just the tactics in DJing. You know what I'm saying? Influences production, and you know, from juggling, you know, records like, you know, break beats, you know, from, you know, doing little tricks from juggling records, you know what I'm saying, back and forth with the cutting and scratching and figuring out little routines and stuff like that, all influence production, you know, to some more than others. But you know what I'm saying, for me, it happened like, you know, through DJing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So Summit
production stuff.
Summit mentioned Marley Marl just now. I know that Marley Marl was a mentor to you and probably still is. Like, what's one thing you take with you that Marley taught you or gave you? What's been the biggest jewel that you've got from your relationship with him?
Everything, basically. You know what I'm saying? Just his sound alone, and then hearing his stories personally, you know, how records came about, you know, was all a big deal to me. You know what I'm saying? And just being in his presence and seeing him at his best doing what he does all influenced me to do what I do.
Mm. You know what I'm saying? Mm. I'm going to get into my nerd bag though now, Pete. And this is a question I've wanted to ask you for many years of my life. Are we ever going to get an official release of the Future Flavors remixes?
You know what? We haven't discussed that yet, but... I think it would be cool if we could all find the cleanest copies possible. I mean, I have a few.
Okay. That Redman remix.
Oh.
Yeah. We need I need that in my life.
Okay. Okay. That's an old classic joint.
Speaking of clean copies, what's this I hear about Grand Poobah and some demos that never came out? Have you found them yet? Are they lost forever? There were some demos you recorded.
Well, it was one we have that's actually someone put out.
Oh, wow.
And, it's called How You Living, and it's on Apple Music. But it that was the only one, really, that we did. I didn't even know how that got,
how did that come out? Yeah.
I have no idea. You know, slick hands, you know what I'm saying? But that was one that we made that demo before we even made any type of record.
Right. And we
were trying to do things.
You had a really good relationship with the guys, Poobah, X and stuff like that.
Definitely.
And also, we obviously know your relationship with Heavy D. And your family, but are there any kind of stories or from the recording sessions that stick in your mind? And looking back now, all these years, is there any kind of one thing that you learned from him that you still take to your life every day?
Basically everything he was, I wanted to be, you know what I'm saying? And on a personal level, as a person, you know what I'm saying? And everything that I learned from him was, going for what you love to do in life, and him seeing a talent in me help, and him helping me bring it out was one of the highlights, you know, of growing, like, you know, into the music aspect in our lives, because we come from young, you know what I'm saying? So we to do something new like this, I had to follow in his footsteps, because he was the first rap artist in Mount Vernon to, you know, start a whole chain gang of other rappers and other talented people.
Rest in peace.
And so, you know, rest in peace to him. He was like the greatest person and one of the greatest artists and one of the greatest empowerers that I ever met.
You know what? Heavy D deserves way more credit. What I love about him, his music was always fun. But it was never cringe and it was never corny. And you know, oftentimes we have these discussions about like best album runs and all that. I was thinking today and I'm like, Heavy D's run, you know, it's up there. Like, I listened to Blue Funk just the other day and I'm like, this album is very, very serious.
Yes.
Very, very, very serious.
And he wanted to go in that direction when we did that album. So he was like, I want to get more street. So, yeah, you know, that's the route we took.
Okay, so let's talk about like Green Street Studios. I'm a liner notes nerd, and I've always been fascinated by studios. We just spoke to David Lockwin, from D&D,
which is an art gallery now. Green Street is no longer a studio anymore. Yeah, it's an art gallery.
I know. But take us back to your time at Green Street. Tell us about the vibe and what was it about Green Street Studios that made you so productive and comfortable just to be there.
I think watching the Bomb Squad work, and I was just a beginner. And I had to learn from a lot of people, and it helped me out a lot because I became successful in the production, and it was like a kid in a candy store watching those guys work. I saw Ice Cube album go down, in there, on the mixing tip. I didn't get to see Cube himself in there, but the music they were producing and they were mixing, and I got to see a lot of it.
So sticking with Green Street, and I hope I pronounce his name correctly, Jamie Staub. That's your guy. Talk about your working relationship with him, because from what I understand, it's still going.
He's
to the state.
He's actually waiting on me now.
bring him in.
I told him, I said, I gotta do the Zoom call first, man, and then I'm on my way.
Okay, we won't keep you too long.
It's all good.
I was listening to another interview you did, and you mentioned something about a special EQ at Green Street that you were looking for. Did you ever get to find it?
Well, I mean, it wasn't that I was looking for it. I already had it working there.
Yes, that's right. Saying?
It was other people asking me, what do I use?
Okay.
Other people were asking me, because I was doing things with the samples and the beats and stuff, and they were asking me, what was I using?
Okay, so but from what I understand, when the studio closed, a lot of equipment got sold, and
pretty much.
Okay, all right. So that's your secret weapon. We'll keep that one in the stash.
Yeah, I mean, people know. Some people know. Some people don't.
They wanted the source, Pete. That's what they wanted. They wanted the source.
Yeah, but I ain't no snitch.
Listen, there's too much sample snitching going out here. There's too much snitching general going on out here. We can't have this.
Yeah, not at all.
Yeah. I don't mind letting something fly that's normal, like a record that everyone knows, and that's different. But the obscurity stuff and all that other thing, that stuff stays secret. You can't really tell nobody.
No, you definitely can't. Can you talk about the importance of like the I&I album, like 25 years later? Like, you listen to it now, Grown Man Sport. There's so many classics on that album. For you, what do you feel is the importance 25 years later, looking back on that album?
Oh, man. So much fun to do, but it was a shame that the full album didn't come out after being produced, mixed, and ready to, fly. It didn't come out on Elektra, only got as far as the single, two singles actually, but they never released the album, and unfortunately it got bootlegged a lot and so forth. So, but it was a great time producing that, and that was around the time when I first met Jay Dilla. And that's when I first heard his beats doing that album. And I was floored.
It's crazy. We just spoke to Skills. And he told us the story about how he met Q-Tip, and how Q-Tip was flying the banner for Dilla, and how he and Skills then talked about how he met Dilla, JD, obviously at the time.
Yeah.
Their relationship flourished.
Well, Q-Tip actually, when I was doing the I&I album, came through. He's on the I&I album.
That's correct.
So he, brought a cassette of beats and just popped it in. He ain't say nothing, right? And he's just let the beats play, and I'm like, yo, what the fuck? Like, what's going on? Who made these beats? Like, what the hell? And then he told me, And then I met him, actually hung out with him for a whole week at his house.
Wow.
Jay Dilla in Detroit.
Wow.
And we made joints, we made beats, And it was dope.
Dope. I was talking to Grap Lover last weekend. We were talking about the I&I album, and he mentioned
Grap was with me. Grap was with me, actually. with the whole Dilla thing.
Yeah, and he mentioned about whole Little Brother and how we introduced you to Little Brother. But he also mentioned something on Soul Brother Records that I didn't know. And I'm like, I'm going to have to ask Pete. Tell me about Taste of Forte. I think they were a group you were going to sign to Soul Brother Records, like an R&B group.
Oh, yeah, man. That was a long time ago. It never really came to fruition. But, you know, shout out to the homies. You know, I still speak to one of the members, JB, once in the blue.
Okay. Did you record any stuff with them, or was it just an idea?
Nah, we didn't really get to do anything.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
That's a shame.
No, I remember in Rap Pages you talked about it, and they spelt Forte very differently to how it's actually spelt.
How did they spell it?
They spell it Forty.
Y-T-A-Y.
Oh, the rap spelling? Okay, that's fine.
Yeah, the rap spelling. But, you know, you talked about it. That you talked about the compilation album, talked about Hev, you talked about Taste of Forte. It was crazy. That's crazy.
Yeah, that never came to, you know, I don't know. I guess, you know, being young in the game, I had a lot more to learn about putting out or running the label or anything like that.
But now, fast forward all these years, Pete Rock and R&B album. When are we getting this? Who are you working with to get this R? Because you've done stuff with Mac Wiles. There's some great stuff you do with Mac.
And I have R&B probably on my own album with the band, Pete Rock and the Soul Brothers album. You know, no P-strumentals. This will be the album.
Okay.
Okay. I like your stuff with Leela James, by the way.
Yeah.
If we're talking about R&B.
Oh, thank you. Actually, you know, we were in touch recently, and hopefully we could get something new out.
Yeah, I'd love to. And got to shout you out for Take Your Time with Loose Ends. Come
on. It's my favorite R&B group ever.
Loose Ends.
Listen.
Over everyone.
Come on now.
Over everyone.
I want to talk to you about the cultural value of the Pete Rock remix. It carries so much weight. Like, your remixes give a different spin on classics. They put people on, they revitalize careers, they do all of that. Like, in your opinion, what does the Pete Rock remix mean to hip-hop culture?
Hopefully a lot, you know. But even though remixes didn't count, it was just a straight fee, you know. It was fun to do because I was actually just trying to, you know, do my bodacious. What do you call it?
Braggadocious. Bodacious. We know what you mean.
What I'm saying?
We know
what you mean. With the skills, I was happy with this. I was happy with what I learned, and I was just having fun. And, you know, the remix game is like, you know what I'm saying?
Your remixes are so important, though, Pete, man. I've got to, what was I listening to? The Lots of Loving remix. And how you guys did the vocals over and then the hook was sung. Listen, come on,
it's a completely different vibe. We used to have CD, like Toni Braxton, for example, You're Making Me High, she would have a separate CD just for the remixes. And I think that a lot of that stuff is down to what, right, a lot of that was down to what you were able to achieve and how important the remixes became. That was because of you.
Yeah.
Really, it was really because of you. You set that trend off in that 90s, from the early 90s, from Down With The King all the way through. There were separate CDs. So you'd buy the run with the radio edit instrumental, and then you have the remix CD, which is just full of dance, R&B, hip-hop. But that's because of you. So that's the... I mean, that impact is crazy, and having that legacy is wonderful.
I just want to say, though, that You Can't Stop the Prophet remix is silly. I become very aggressive when I hear that. You Can't Stop Christopher.
Shout out to DJ Premier, you know what I'm saying? And J Rule.
Yeah, you can't stop Christopher when that one comes on, I tell you. Trust.
Yeah, man. Yeah, that was the good times in hip hop back then.
What's this I hear about Big Pun eating crisps while recording his verse to Verbal Murder 2? What flavor of crisps was he eating?
He was eating potato chips. You know what I'm saying? Wise potato chips.
And he was just doing his verse in between.
Did the verse in one take and listened back to it and said, "Let me do another one." And he did it again, and that was it. It was over.
What? That's incredible. There's
I was good with the very very first take. Actually, that's the take I used.
Okay.
Madness.
One take.
Yeah.
One take.
The one take. It's good. Look, he did it in one take and just did a reference one just in case.
Can you imagine, like, all his whole career, his work with legends, future legends, like the stuff with DZA, Sky Zoo, like there's so much that he's you've contributed to this game. It's incredible. Absolutely incredible. Yes, and still at the top of the game. And he's still got so much to do. Incredible, bro. Yeah, absolutely incredible.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Thank you, man.
I want to touch on your relationship with Large Professor. You guys have co-production credits, but one of my favorite songs you guys did was The Rap World on the High School High soundtrack. Like, how do two legends like you get in a room, and what's the process in terms of co-production? Because I'm not a producer. So is it someone does the sample, someone does the drums? Like, how did that song come together?
Well, we had fun. He was one of the first dudes that I started hanging around, actually. And, you know, we got together because we always used to hang out with each other. You know what I'm saying? And we just ended up saying, yo, let's do this joint. And we did it. And it was fun because, you know, we used to go to each other's cribs. You know what I'm saying? And I used to bring my beats and records to his house. He used to bring his stuff to my house. And we ended up doing that beat, I think, in my basement or something. You know what I'm saying? And then, you know, when we was mixing it, he added some stuff in there, and he added, you know, some, you know, just something that'll take it over the top. And because I made the bass of the beat, and then he just did the rest. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Classic. And then we rapped on it. Then we rapped on it. It was, you know.
Classic. Classic.
I mean, you know what, man? You know, like, back then it used to be a little bit more, like, togetherness, you know, and unity, you know, a little bit, you know what I'm saying, in hip-hop. It was a point where it was, like, golden, where people were just hanging out with each other and chilling, making joints together. And yeah, me and Large... We did a few joints together. We did a whole bunch of things.
Mm. What changed? What do you think changed that though? That kind of
what changed? What?
The unity changed. Back in the day, you had the unity. Do you think that still exists, or do you think that's a bit different now?
It's a takeover, man. It's different. It's a different time, man. People just, you know,
out for themselves.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not disrespecting nothing. I'm just saying, just things change. You know what I'm saying? You know. And what once was is not what it used to be anymore. That's fine. You know, and I can adapt to the times and still do what's being done, but just better.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, understood. You talk about unity. You dropped a Posse Cup, I think it's 2019 now, Eastern Conference All-Stars. Asked me to ask you, what on earth were you thinking when you made that beat? Because he started going on about the layering, and he was like, this is Pete, quintessential Pete Rock. Like, what was going on?
I was just, you know, that's just me always exercising the notes, the key notes, and what I could put with what, and what sounds the same, and what records I know, and what is not too far off, and what I can, you know, pitch and change and make everything sound, be in tune. And I used to do that a lot, practice that, you know, a lot. But that day when I was making that beat, I don't know, it just was some days you get that feeling, you know, and you just go in there and just start wilding. And I was vibing, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And when you catch that, when you catch that vibe, anything goes.
Yeah. Yeah, the Retropolitan is a brilliant project, by the way.
Thank you.
Oh man, like One Time with Raheem Devon, it's so good. Like,
shout out to him. Oof. He's dope.
Yeah,
yeah.
You're not from this earth, Pete. I've just realized you're not from the. I don't think the Milky Way, the galaxy we live in. I think you're visiting, like Chris says. You're not from here. Like, I just think, like, the stuff with Ghost. You think of Nas. You think, like, just gem, like Ross. You did stuff with Dizza. Like, I could just go on and on. Like, you are not.
Yeah, Smoke Dizza.
You are not from here.
Like, just visiting.
No. I don't understand. I don't think you understand. You're like...
It's passion. It's just passion, man. And what I love doing, man. And what God put me here to do, man. And that's it, man. You know, I'm going to do it till it's done.
Before we wrap up, because we need to wrap up, I want to talk to very quickly about Extinction Level Event 2. Busta Rhymes, you, Dilla. Like, how... Like, when we heard that, I still hear it and get goosebumps when I hear that.
That album is incredible.
It's you know,
shout out to Busta Rhymes, man. You know, we've been friends a long time.
I had to go get that signed too.
You know what's crazy about that album? It was like the culmination of 30 years. This Busta Rhymes was paying homage to himself. Like this, all the different flavors from all his previous albums. You know, you talk about fan service. He gave the fans what they wanted. I sat back and I listened to this album and I said, how Busta Rhymes dropping one of the best albums of his career in 2020? This is mad.
It's just, once it's in you, it's just in you, man. You know, it ain't never going no place. You know what I'm saying? I think I can speak for Bus and I can speak for myself. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, it's, we've been doing this a very, 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 very long time.
Yeah. How did it feel to hear you and Dilla together? Like, it was almost like this is divine order, but like, how did you find out about
Well, that's not the first interaction me and Dilla had. So, you know, he rapped over a song on Soul Survivor 2. Yeah. He rapped on one of my beats on there. I rapped on Once Upon a Time.
That's right.
You know, and, you know, to be in production side by side with him is awesome. I always listen to him and Madlib's, you know, album together. And, you know, man, I wish I just could have got to do that with him before he left us.
You know what? Just saying that, I felt a chill down my spine. A Pete Rock, Jay Dilla album would have stopped Earth. We're not ready for that.
That would have murdered everybody. Yeah.
It would have been a wrap.
Yeah.
Chris, anything else?
I know Summit stand out at the beginning, but I'm going to stand out one more time. Pete Rock. We don't just love you as a producer, but you're one of our favorite people. We love what you stand for. Man. And for thank me you, personally, as a Jamaican, a fellow Jamaican.
Oh, come on, man. Why?
Come on now. The fact you know, Mount Rushmore, you could probably have two slots on there in terms of hip hop production. And the fact that you're Jamaican, what you and Heavy D did and Grap, come on, man. Troy, if hip hop was a country, Troy could be our national anthem. We love you, we respect you, and it means so much to us that you took the time to join us on episode 100. It's a massive milestone for us.
Of course, man. Bless every time.
Pete, man, I got to ask you something, though. I got to ask you something, right?
Yeah.
How many UK podcasts have you been on?
Need to be on more, I'll tell you that.
We'll help you with that. But is this your first?
I actually like the UK because they about the business. You know, we talk about music and events and stuff that created magic in music and hip hop. I love it.
Yeah. No, we just honestly to echo Chris, man, you're a superhero. Like we need to give flowers to those who are superheroes, not just Marvel, not Marvel comics, but to real life superheroes. You are part of that DC universe. We appreciate you and we love you, man.
Thank you, man.
Appreciate Pete for the time. This excellent, man. We got to speak to one of our heroes, man, on the podcast.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I just had to, you know, put my flag in the ground for Jamaica.
No, you did, I think he appreciated that. I can't really get involved in that. I can just maybe put an air horn in the air. I'm not Jamaican, innit? I can't get involved in it.
Or lick a shot.
lick a shot.
You know what though? Like on a serious note, him and Heavy D, what they've done for my Jamaican pride, you know, and we have the obvious players, you know, we got your Marcus Garveys and all them, but just for someone in hip hop culture, what him and Heavy D did for my sense of identity and pride is huge. It should never be understated. And I just got so much time and love for those guys. Like, it's just, I'm having a moment. It's very humbling to know that we could get Pete Rock.
Yeah, absolutely.
And not just get him, but him spending time to talk to us.
Absolutely. Now we appreciate him and his time. 100th episode up. To another 1,000 episodes before, you know, we duck out.
Before you go though, bro, as a hip hop nerdy question, right? What's your favorite Pete Rock produced track? No, let's do the hip hop Twitter thing. What's your top 5? Top 5. Oat.
One's gotta go. I don't know. I don't know because I think some of the Ghostface stuff I really like. I'm gonna go with The World Is Yours simply because of the impact it had on my life. Mm. I will say that. But then like Ragu, I don't know how to pronounce it with
it's,
Ghost.
It's Ragu, innit? It's Ragu. Not hard to say, innit?
Sorry, I am, you know, I'm from the upside down. I'm just thinking. I'm not gonna say The Joy because that's Hovind. I'm not gonna do that. Can you imagine? No, you know what? Actually, I like Rather Unique. Do or Die.
Do you know what? I've got another hip hop confession.
What?
I never got into that song.
Okay.
Never. Okay. I preferred Give Me Yours.
Give Me Yours is good. I can give you that. But I think if I'm gonna pick anything, I would go with Juicy. But remember he did the original, right?
But it came out as the remix.
I'll go with Juicy.
Yeah.
Go with Juicy.
I've got a few, man. Mecca and the Soul Brother.
Yes.
You know what's a fire tune that people don't really talk about? Again, I sound like a hip hop Twitter account. Mm-hmm. It's Like That from the Mecca and the Soul Brother album.
Yeah.
There's a few, man. The hip hop Hooray remix.
I Got a Love.
That's dope. Sun Won't Come Out is crazy. Sun Won't Come Out. I was reading a story just before we go. You know he sampled Ahmed Jamal on the World Is Yours?
Yeah. Yeah.
There was an ill story. He went to see a dermatologist. I read this interview. It blew my mind. And he was talking to the dermatologist and he realized that her surname was Jamal. So he's telling the dermatologist, like, I do music and blah, blah, blah. And then the dermatologist says to Pete Rock, oh, my dad does music too. Pete Rock asked the dermatologist, what's your dad's name? Ahmed Jamal.
Wow. How's that full circle?
So Pete Rock's dermatologist is Ahmed Jamal's daughter. Divine order,
bro. That's crazy, bruv.
Yeah, God is real.
Nah,
God
that's is real. Soul Brother Girls on the podcast, bro. I love that.
Yeah,
I
man.
Love that.
Thank you. Thank you, Matt. Thank you to the listeners. 100 episodes. We are outside.
It's cool, man. It's cool. Listen, I'm not going to make too much of a big deal of it just because I know what we've got coming and what we are able to do. This is just a milestone. We have to celebrate and mark, but there's so much more coming and there'll be more successes and celebrations to have. So I'm going to get me some Douce, actually, I think. I think this year I'm going to drink some Douce.
Yeah, man. Pour up something, man.
Yeah, absolutely. But as always, you can follow us on Twitter, Instagram and Facebook at Break the Atoms. Chris is I Am Kinetic. My handle is at Hip Hop Chronicle. Appreciate you all. Until next time, peace.